Hi, welcome to Coffee and Closers. I'm Nikolai Bedor, and I want to personally invite you to join me and one of today's top performing sales stars for a cup of coffee and authentic conversation. And our collective goal is that you will walk away with tangible knowledge that you can apply to your sales efforts today. Are you ready? Grab a cup, fill it up, and let's get into another episode of Coffee and Closers. I want to introduce today's guest. I'm such a fan of, and we hear sales. We found sales. We've tried to break down the stereotype, but Aliza is one of those living proof that mission-based sales always wins. When there is a soul to your reason, to your purpose, success follows that. Right. This mission, this story, has been featured in Forbes magazine. It's been featured on the Today Show, and now. As the crown jewel of her career, no doubt, I'm going to welcome her to the Coffee and Closers stage. Please put your hands together for Aliza Bowman. All right. Well, I'm sure you've done more things than just be on TV and in famous magazines. So
nope. You wanna... That's it.
And now this.
That's why they gave me.
I would love for you to share kind of your interesting journey and how sales has you know, kind of aided you to play a part in that. Would you mind filling the blanks?
Yeah. So on a cold winter day, no, I'm just kidding. I grew up in Duluth, Minnesota. Yes, Duluth! My background, I went to Syracuse University with undergrad in retail management marketing. Worked for Sam Adams Boston Beer Company for 2 years, selling beer in and around the Boston area. Not a bad way to start your career as a young woman in Boston. If nothing else, it was a great pickup line. I was like, I have beer. And they're like, oh, welcome to my home. but the crux of the story actually begins with my parents. So my father's from Morocco. My mother's from Florida. They met and married in Israel and naturally ended up in Duluth, Minnesota in 1983. Because there's nowhere else in the world that they clearly could have landed. But my dad has a background in chemistry. He actually has a master's degree in chemistry from the University of Bordeaux in France. My mom has her background in audiology, speech pathology. But my dad's passion for coffee is the reason we're all here. So when they landed in Duluth in the early 1980s, coffee, specialty coffee, did not exist in northern Minnesota. There was a few folks in the Minneapolis, St. Paul markets who were exploring the specialty coffee movement. And really, specialty coffee was getting known and started on the East and the West Coast, but not in Duluth, Minnesota. So my dad, being European, was used to a more robust style of coffee, and he simply couldn't find that. So my mom bought him a little home coffee roaster and some green coffee beans, and he started roasting in our kitchen just for his own consumption. He started having friends and neighbors try it, and everyone thought, wow, this is like nothing I've ever tried before, and you should really think about starting a coffee business. My parents had no business thinking about starting a coffee business, but they, you know, went to the banks and said, hey, we want to start a coffee roasting business. Would you give us a loan? And they said, you're crazy. No one cares about coffee. They put cream and sugar in it. This is never going to go. You're never going to get people in northern Minnesota to care about coffee and to pay this kind of premium for something like this. And my dad said, I think you're wrong. And so in 1990, they started the Alakef Coffee Roasting Company in the basement of an old school building on London Road in Duluth. And 30 years later, here we are. It's just that simple. Questions? No, I'm kidding.
Show is over.
The show is over. So I, you know, growing up, was sort of adamant that I was not going to come back into the coffee business. That felt like my parents' thing. I was happy on the East Coast. I felt really settled. And I ended up getting, after I left Sam Adams, I ended up going to University of Massachusetts and getting a master's in school counseling. So I had every intention of being a high school guidance counselor. And my parents called after I'd finished that program and said, hey, we just want to let you know we've decided we want to retire. We know we've talked to you a couple times about coming back to take the business, but if that's not what you want to do, we support that, but we're done. We're ready to retire. So without another exit strategy, we've approached a broker. We want to sell the business. And I was fortunate enough, ironically, it was Josh Arndt, but I was fortunate enough to be coming home for a couple weddings that year. And something when my parents said that we're going to sell the business just internally didn't resonate with me. I felt this pull that I had never felt before. And I was coming home to be in a friend's wedding, and her husband picked me up in the cities. We drove up north and talked the whole way about the possibilities of what this business could be and what an opportunity it was for someone of my age to come and take a business that was well-known, profitable, successful. And I hadn't really thought about it that way before. So I didn't want to look back on my life and wonder what might have been. So fast forward to the fall of 2013, I moved to Duluth on a 6-month trial to start to see if I had the passion to be in the business. Because what I didn't want to do was to just take over the family business if I didn't truly feel the passion the way my father had. And if I didn't see an opportunity to make it my own. So I came back, and one of the things very quickly I realized was, number one, I do have the passion, as it turns out. But number two, while my parents had really created this fundamentally sound, profitable, successful, well-reputed company, they had not invested significantly in marketing, advertising, and brand awareness. So while we were a successful company, I could see the writing on the wall that if we didn't do something to either reinvent ourselves or reinvigorate our brand, we would be non-existent in a period of time. Because when they started the company, the market was fairly unsaturated, and now it was extremely saturated, as you all know. I mean, Driven's a great example. There are so many wonderful coffee roasters in our market. And so I knew I needed to do something to differentiate, and I wanted to create something that was more reflective and representative of me, my voice, my generation, and the next generation, not only of coffee drinkers, but of the company ownership. So I didn't know what that would be until I attended a breakfast for an organization called the International Women's Coffee Alliance. And this organization works with women in almost 30 different countries to help them gain access to financing, education, resources where they otherwise might not have access to that. And this year, they were gearing up for a biannual conference in Colombia. And so a gentleman from Colombia came up and told a story about a husband and wife who owned a farm in Colombia. And because Colombia had been so war-torn, the husband had to go and fight in the war and was unfortunately killed. So the wife took ownership of the farm. A key piece of their machinery breaks down, and she goes to the banks in Colombia to ask for a loan, and they refused it to her because she's a woman. And I was shocked. So not only had I basically lived my entire life in and around the coffee industry, I have a background in counseling. So I was like, this is so unjust. It's 2014. I must do something. But that was really my aha moment to realize that not only could we create something that felt representative of a different voice, but it also gave me an opportunity to build something that brought awareness to this inequity. So we launched the City Girl Coffee Company in 2015, and our mission is to source as much coffee as possible from women-owned and managed farms and cooperatives from around the world. And we work with organizations to give a portion back to ensure that these women truly have access to the financing, education, and resources that they need to be sustainable. So that brings us to today.
Wow. Put your hands together. That's great, right? So I want to go back to the mission, okay? I want to go back to that mission. But something that you said when we were doing our prep call that I thought was really interesting, and I don't know if you said it or I just can interpret it, but you sell with your ears. And you brought up kind of your therapy, your counseling background. And something that I really loved is that I want you to share what you shared with me about what is your sales superpower and how has it enabled you to accomplish what you've accomplished?
Yeah, I think it goes beyond just a sales superpower, but it really speaks to my leadership style and how I choose to run my organization. But the sort of core of what they teach you in counseling school is compassion and empathy and to be a good listener, right? I mean, you can't go into a session with, especially I was going to be a middle school or a high school teacher, like God save those people who are doing literally God's work. But you can't go into a session with a teenager and have your own agenda and just be checked out because it's really important and it's really valid what they're telling you. And that goes beyond students, that goes beyond you know, your employees. It goes beyond. It's just a human interaction to want to be heard and to feel validated. And I think sometimes we, as salespeople, I know when I was a salesperson at Sam Adams, whenever I would have ride-alongs with my higher-ups, the one thing they would always sort of nix me on was not following the 80-20 rule. Because I was so excited to go in there and to show my managers the tools that I had learned and to prove to them that I was a good salesperson. And I would just go in and I'd be like, and blah, 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 and we'll give you this and we'll give you that and we'll give you this. And they're like, great. Okay, so how do you think the call went? I'm like, I think it was great. I got all the things I wanted to accomplish. And they're like, uh-huh. And you gave away a neon sign for like a 10-case display. Do you think we could have like maybe gotten a little more for that? And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe that wasn't important to them. So really understanding, I learned from an early age, really understanding it's so important to understand what is important to the consumer, to the employee, to the person on the other side of your call, right? I mean, for us, when I conceptualized the Citigo brand, I was working with some consultants at the time, and I came back from this breakfast like goosebumps, just so invigorated. If you've ever had one of those moments that just everything aligns and you feel like you've found your purpose in life, it's so exciting. And I came back and I told them about this and they were like, ooh, I don't know, you know, to have a company with the name girl in it, you're immediately alienating 50% of the population. And it's great to have a mission, but we've been in the CPG retail and the coffee business for a long time. It's not enough to drive consumers at the point of purchase. You know, they're not going to pay a couple bucks more just because you have a great mission. And I was like, first of all, no offense, but you're like older white males, so you're not totally my target demographic. But also, I just think you're wrong. I think consumers do care more than we give them credit for. I think the tides are changing. And so I sort of similarly to my dad stuck to my gut and I, you know, went move forward anyways. And so as we move on, we continue to really pay attention to listening to what our you know, customers are telling us, listening to what their customers are telling us, because our customers and the end user isn't always the same, and really listening to, you know, what my employees have to say and their opinions and their feelings, because that's valid and that will help us as a company. So I think, you know, sometimes when I was leaving counseling, I had some friends in Boston who were like, wow, aren't you glad that you just went and spent 2 years getting a master's degree that you'll never use? And I say to them, haha, joke's on you. I use that skill more than anything. Like real conversations I've had with my employees is like, okay, so if I'm hearing you correctly, what it sounds like you're saying is, do you feel like you've been hurt? You know, and that's like a real conversation I had last week. So I think that is an understated tool that we sometimes forget because we're so excited, which is such a wonderful thing that makes us all really great salespeople. But we like to talk. Most of us in this room probably like to talk and hear our own voices a lot. And so I think mine is telling myself to shut up and listen.
So when you were getting pushback, that was from your employees or that was from the bank or who was pushing back?
That was from consultants that I was working with at the time.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Well, then how many business owners do we have here? Okay. Quite a few. And then salespeople? All right. So I want to dig a little bit deeper because the thing that I was really, so I'm a sales guy, right? And I had the other day where we lost something to business as usual. We lost something to this is the norm. Right? Anyone ever lost to, you're competing with nothing. You're competing with just the fear of change. The fear of change is what you had to sell when you had to sell your vision to folks that were looking at this business going, we're talking employees, that is. They're going, why would we change? We're successful. This is fine. And you had to come in there and you disrupted everything. Can we talk more specifics on how you sold that vision and then kind of lead into your branding style and how you message through marketing?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that was a unique challenge because a handful of, you know, here I have more than half at the time employees who were hired by my parents. You know, my general manager has been with the company for 25 years. Our account receivables gal has been with us for 25 years. You know, they could have sort of looked down on me and they could have said, we know better. But I had to prove to them that I have the best interest of the company in mind. And the proof was really in the numbers. I mean, the proof was on the paper that we could not continue to operate status quo. We would not exist. I probably could have made a lot more money for a handful of years, but the company eventually would have ceased to exist because we would have become irrelevant. And so that was really the key, was selling them on, as a company, as a brand, you have to be reinvigorating yourself, reinventing yourself, and recreating a new story time and time again. Otherwise, you will cycle yourself out of the natural life cycle of a business. I mean, that's just how business operates. It's how brands operate. Certainly, we can see that, you know, you just look down the street to General Mills or 3M or, you know, Target, any of the number of the large retailers, you see that time and time again, is this idea of reinventing yourself. And so I had to really sell them that I was leading them and not telling them, but I was leading them on a journey that would better our company and that would create a new future and opportunity for us.
And you've been killing it, right? How many product salespeople do we have here? Are people that sell products into big retail? All right. So for all of you, I'm going to ask a question because selfishly I want to know. You broke into Target, Byerly's, so on and so forth. You did it your way, right? You led with mission. You City Girl Coffee. You're like, I'm not breaking. This is what we are. How did you break into those big box retailers? Because that's got to be pretty challenging, especially from arguably a smaller company from Duluth, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, Target took us about 3 years because they don't want to be necessarily an industry leader. They want to be a fast follower. So they wanted to, you know, we had to prove ourselves to them. But I think what was so important to me, and really as we started the City Girl brand, you know, one of the first things I did, number one, I hired a publicist because I was like, great, it's great to have a brand with a fantastic story, but if nobody knows it, it's not going to do us any good. So we've got to get the messaging out. We've got to get the story out. But then secondly, having everything, you know, investing in a really solid content media company who could create branded content for us that really, it was went beyond the packaging. It told a story from, you know, the point of sale to the, you know, to the marketing materials, to the packaging, to our social media presence. Everything looked the same. It told a story. And that was the key for us, right? It was the story, because people, it's cute packaging. You know, I was like, just make it unapologetically feminine. I was like, my favorite color is pink. Just like, throw up feminine on this packaging. You know, I wanted it to be right. I wanted it to be almost a little bit obnoxious, because you go to a traditional grocery store or retailer and it's sort of the same, right? I mean, it's kind of like there's a million choices. I mean, it's the same thing when you go to a wine store. I mean, how do most of us buy wine unless you're a sommelier or something, but you purchase it on the label. I mean, because you just don't know unless they have tasty notes or a little bit blurb about the story or someone's there doing a demo, right? I mean, that's just how the marketplace exists in a lot of different industries. So we knew we had it to create a visual differentiator, but then we had to communicate our actual differentiator. So we had to incorporate parts of the story on either our packaging or our point of purchase or point of sale materials to convey that messaging very quickly, because we can't always be in store. It's very expensive, especially when you get into large retailers. It's very expensive to demo. It's very timely and not as cost efficient as some other marketing tools or methods. So that piece was so important to us. And so I think that's been a large part of our success, was being able to communicate that story in a visually appealing and succinct way.
Awesome. What scares you? Like, being a business owner is scary.
Yes.
And you're doing it.
And all of it.
And you're doing it your way. So can you talk about something that we do here, and I think that's why you see as many people as you do, is we really embrace the journey more than the accomplishment. You know what I mean? Because the journey is the part that we can all relate to. I mean, I can't do half the stuff you can do. Maybe it's reciprocated, right? But we can all try at something, and we can all fail, and we can all overcome. I want to talk about your fears. When the last time you thought about quitting, shutting it down?
Yesterday. I'm just kidding.
Can we go there?
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, I made a lot of mistakes early on. So I had an opportunity to also open a small coffee shop in a grocery store in Duluth. I went to college for retail. I'd always wanted to open a retail store. And at the time, I felt like, well, if I don't take this opportunity now, this opportunity isn't going to come back around. This is my chance. It was not successful. I lost a lot of money, and it put us in a honestly more financially difficult position today than we otherwise would have been. So I think for me, it's balancing, I was just talking about this earlier today, it's just balancing the growth to the cash flow equation as a company. Because as a small business, cash is king. And it's difficult to go to a traditional financial institution to say, I know it doesn't look great on paper, but trust me, we're going places. Like, you just have to have faith. And they're like, yeah, no, thank you. This seems a little risky. Right. And so then it's like, well, what are your other options? Like, I don't necessarily need like a traditional investor, because I need somebody at this point who has the experience, who can help me scale the company. I think my biggest fear is that my skill set will not travel with the pace of the growth of the company. That I have really great skills, I know how to be a great leader, that I've gotten the company and the brand to a place that's fantastic for today, but what if that's not good enough to get us to where we want to go tomorrow? And how do I find and access those people and those tools to help me continue to be successful where my skill sets stop? I think that is something that, for me, I think it's terrifying to say, like, I don't know everything. I'm not perfect. I don't have all the answers. And when you are a CEO or business owner or the head of a large organization or the head of a large department, and everyone's looking at you and going, what's the answer? And you don't have it. That terrifies me to be like, I don't know. And it's a very humbling experience, I think, to just be truthful and transparent and say, I don't have the answer, but let me see if I can find it. I think that's a really difficult thing to do. I'm expecting my first child in June. So that's also what terrifies me. Oh, thank you. But just how do I balance being a mom and running a company, especially in a time that's, you know, growth intensive, and you can't take your eye off the ball, right? It can't be a traditional, like, okay, I'm going to take my hand off the wheel for 3 months. Good luck, you guys. Like, hope it's here when I get back. That's not an option. And so I think it just, the balance terrifies me, and how to, that changes every day. So how do you handle it when it's changing so rapidly?
You know, something we've talked about is your last name. I mean, you can share that if you want or whatever, but keeping that last name because of your brand. And we've seen this a lot now with, you know, like this, I know that the CEO of SAP is because he wears the shades. You know, you're seeing this new, I don't know if it's new, but the last few years where the CEO is now the face, isn't the person in a desk running the whole operation where the team goes forward. How do you balance that? Because I found it kind of a struggle just to be the brand of something and then also have to do the work, and those two things kind of blending, sometimes not in a positive way.
For sure. I think that's a conversation that my leadership team and I have constantly, is where is the right place for me in the company, and is it as CEO? That answer is not necessarily yes. You know, that might be to be owner of the company and to be the brand and to be the face, but my place in the company may not be best served running the company. That might be a better job for somebody else, so that I can really go and focus, because nobody else can be the face of the company. That is for sure. But someone else could probably come and run it as good, it may be better than I can. So I think that, you know, and I think sometimes, especially when it's something that you've created, it's really hard to, it's like a child. You're not ready necessarily to like drop them off at college, but at some point you have to in order to let them continue to grow. And so, for me personally, I enjoy being the face. Like this, what we're doing today, like this is me in my happy spot. Like the day to day, the figuring out where the cash is going to come from is like not my favorite thing in the world to do. Shocking, I know. But I love being the face of the brand. So for me, it's about how to get me out there to do that more and less of kind of the day to day stuff and finding somebody, but also being in a place where the company can support that financially. So it's incredibly challenging, but I've been, you know, out to restaurants or bars or something, had someone come up to me and been like, are you the city girl? I'm like, I am the city girl. You know, that is sort of fun.
What's your meme face? Like when someone gives a selfie, can I take a picture? Do you do this? Do you pouty face? What's kind of your, you know, what's your go-to?
I think probably like a solid.
I'm going to fact check that. I'm going to look at all your pictures because you're out there. I think I'm getting the hook. And I want to open this up. You guys know, for those of you who haven't been here, the next bit is where you guys get to fire away questions. And please, you know, I'm giving you kind of a 3-minute warning. Do that because you get a chance to ask anything you want. This is a trust nest. We're vulnerable up here. Fire away questions. So we'll do that in a few minutes. But I have one about the mission, because you guys are known for you know, sourcing, like the way that you source your beans. Is that source your beans? That sounds naughty. Yeah. Oh, it's the beans bit. It's the beans bit. Yeah. Anyway, source your beans, and then the mission behind that. But for those of us, you know, certain companies are trying, at least at Closed Media here, trying to lead with a mission. That's kind of how we approach the market. Can you kind of maybe shed some light on that strategy, right? From a business standpoint, right? Is how does it help your business by putting the mission out first, the business in the back?
Well, I think the most important thing to remember is that it has to be authentic. I think that there's a sense that, especially as millennials, Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z, whomever it is, that's going to come up into the place, like, this is not probably something that's going to go away, of this mission-driven value proposition. And so I think that some companies are like, I got to hop on that. But it has to be something that's authentic to your brand and to your company. I mean, if it's a afterthought marketing tool, consumers are going to see right through that. I mean, they're a lot savvier than I think we sometimes give them credit for. So the strategy for us was that this is such a authentically important part of our brand story. I mean, we wouldn't have City Girl Coffee if it wasn't for the mission and feeling so passionate about trying to bring awareness to the inequity that is in the coffee space. I think, because, you know, for me, when I was conceptualizing it too, one of the things was looking beyond just the coffee industry. But when I did my homework and the research out there and what it speaks to when women have access to resources and financing. I mean, the infant mortality rates go down in these countries, you know, the GDC goes up, all these things, these huge implications for not just these women and their families, but for the countries surrounding them. And so what that means from a sustainability point, you know, and it was also communicating, like, we're not saying that men are bad and you shouldn't also buy from men. We're just saying that these women, men already have access to these things and women don't have access to them. So let's try to level the playing field a little bit. So that was a piece of it too, of just being like, it's not a mission where we're saying like, oh, one is good and one is bad. Again, just kind of being authentic and let's just try to all do our part to create a better world. And I think that piece is something that sort of transcends coffee. It transcends male, female, generational. That's something that we can all get behind. And so that was really important to be authentic in telling that and being inclusive to not just employees, but consumers and kind of all stakeholders.
That's brilliant. Put your hands together for that. I love this job. So I got one more question that we're gonna open up to you guys. You were 26 when you took on this heap of stress and fear and right, and you overcame it. So if your 26-year-old self was sitting in the crowd, what advice would you want to hear from someone who's accomplished what you have?
Well, the funny thing is I lived in flux when I first moved to, so I'm like, whoa, Pearl Circle. Like, I can see my apartment. 26-year-old me would say, get out of your own way. Hire a fractional finance or somebody in the finance space, hire them immediately. So for me, one of my areas of weakness is finances. Yes, I can read a balance sheet. I understand profitability. I understand margins. I understand basic cash flow, but I didn't have my eye on it. I didn't have my thumb on the pulse in the way that probably a business owner should, because I was off doing the creative things. I was off doing the marketing and doing and being the face of the company and doing the things and spending time in the areas that I wanted to be, because that is my strength. That's what I was good at. But meanwhile, this thing that's very important called money was not necessarily being paid as close attention to. So had I brought somebody in earlier to really just focus in on that, you know, we may be in a different position and be able to move growth a little bit faster today. But I think I had this sense of like, I have to do it all because my parents did. But then I took a step back and was like, there was two of them. There's one of me. I can't do this all alone. It takes a village. And so just to get a little bit more humble, a little more quickly.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to open this up in a second, but I want you guys to give a big roaring Coffee and Closures thank you, because you are so inspiring.
All right. So what do we think? What'd you learn? Well, if you like that, check out coffeeclosures.com for upcoming episodes, recordings, and more. And don't forget to check out our sponsors. Each one has been hand-selected. They are best in class. Until next time, we'll see you at the next Coffee and Closures. Cheers. Say live, come on, live.
live a life we love. Gotta live, I said live, live a life we love.